This week's episode is brought to you by Dana S., who suggested a featured movie on our Facebook page. And also by me. I think I deserve some credit for this one. I've been suffering from a really bad head cold for the past few days. I actually blame it on Halloween, you know, being out on a chilly Halloween night in a kind of skimpy costume. And no, there's no picture, so don't ask. But ever since like the day after Halloween, I've had this nagging cold, so that's pretty bad. And you can probably tell it my voice. And also, I started a new job literally yesterday, one that involves a lot of talking, so that hasn't been great on the voice either. But I'm here! I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna power through it, because I love you guys. So, if you have a movie you'd like us to cover on a future episode, we're going to tell you all the ways you can do that at the end of the show. So stay tuned for that. And now, Mike, theme song, please. Welcome to episode 74 of the Graveyard Shift Horror Podcast, where each week we watch a movie from the horror category, or at least a horror-related movie, and we break it down into the good, the bad, and any other category we decide to make up along the way. We'll talk about the plot, some production details, and anything else we find fun or relevant. I'm your host, Sheldon, and I never work the Graveyard Shift alone. Please say hello to the guy that could be described as the Roger Corman of podcasts, my co-host Mike.
I'll take it. Hey, everybody.
Mike, we had a little break to recuperate from Halloween, so how are you feeling? You ready to do this?
I've been chomping at the bit. This is one of the movies that we, like, when we started talking about, like, doing, like, a scary movie podcast, this was, like, in my top 10 right off the bat. Like, this is something I have been waiting for.
Yeah, and somebody actually requested this one too, so I mean, you're not the only one that's been waiting for this, and we had to sit on this for quite some time. So so not literally, of course, because Mike has severe hemorrhoids, but what I mean is that we suggested it way back during the beginning of the show, but since we wanted to do the War of Worlds radio play for our 2018 Halloween episode to commemorate its 80th anniversary, we thought we'd do this movie immediately after, just so that we can kind of make sort of a comparison between the two and just see how they link up. But, Mike, with that being said, I guess we've already spoiled it. Why don't you tell everyone what we've got for them this week?
Today's episode is Death by Technicolor, trademark, because we watched The War of the Worlds.
Dun, dun, dun.
For the 65th anniversary of the movie.
Yes, we watched the 1953 version, not the Tom Cruise 2005 version, so please keep listening.
Yeah, trust me, we did the good one.
Exactly. So, before we hit our breakdown and I give any details, what do you think of this one, as if I didn't already know?
This is like a fucking 9.5 out of 10. This set the bar for science fiction, horror, alien invasion movies, and so many clearly tried to hit this bar, and I don't think any did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is the gold standard as far as it comes to alien invaders, for sure.
And it came out so early, so you think later movies would have been like, okay, well, now we can add our technology, add everything, but no, this set the bar so high, people are just like, it's going to be at least 30 to 40 years. Like, we're just going to wait until the 80s before we start doing sci-fi movies, because why even bother trying after this?
If you can't tell, Mike really likes this one. But...
Oh, do I stand alone?
Well, I'm going to give some info on this when... just say, like, wipe off your drool and sit down and brace yourself for the Rotten Tomato scores, okay? So anyway, here is a little info about War of the Worlds. Released in August 1953, War of the Worlds is an American sci-fi drama based on the H.G. Wells novel of the same name, changing the setting from Victorian England to 1950s California. It has a runtime of 85 minutes, has a budget of $2 million and had a box office return of $4.3 million, which is weird. I thought it would be higher, especially since, you know, everything I looked up was talking about the big, you know, box office success this thing was. I mean, we've seen some movies that have much lower budgets and did much better in the box office, so.
Well, this was also in 50s money, so that would be like $20 million today.
Yeah, true, but then the budget would be, you know, blown up as well, so.
Yeah, this was, there should have been better word of mouth at this time. Like, I'm surprised people didn't come back and just see this movie, like, time and time again.
Yeah. Okay, now, as for the Rotten Tomatoes scores, Mike, critics pretty much agreed with you, giving it 85%. But now, as for an audience score, which is, I'm just dumbfounded at this. Not that it's a bad score, just much lower than I thought it was going to be. Rotten Tomatoes gives this one an audience score of 71%.
Boo, audience.
Since we've been doing the show, we've seen some much worse movies that has gotten high, at least, like, gotten that score higher. So, I don't know who the fuck was reviewing this thing.
I mean, what the hell did they expect from this movie that it did not deliver on? Hey, this didn't have any kids making friends with the Martians. What the fuck, man?
Millennials, dude. Come on. And here's a little tidbit about Ward Worlds. It won an Academy Award for Best Visual Effects after its run, which, considering 1953, I can completely see why. And in 2011, it was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry in the Library of Congress, being deemed culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant.
Finally.
And as for the plot, if you don't know, I don't know why anybody would not know this, and this is a very simplified plot. A small town in California is attacked by Martians, beginning a worldwide invasion. So you have the breakdown. Most people already know the story. Even if you haven't actually seen this movie, you pretty much know how it goes. But that doesn't stop us from talking about it. I don't know about you, but I've got a lot more in my good category than I do for my bad.
Yeah, I have like a small bad category. But when I was watching this movie, I think I expressed to you concern that... Are we just going to do half a show? Because so far, nothing's hitting my bad category.
Yeah. I got a couple of things. I got two things for my bad. And a lot more for my good. But I got a feeling a lot of what we have to say about the good is going to be the same. So I'm sure that'll get cut down. But as always on the show, we start off with the good. And we start off with the mic.
And, so Mike, and as usual, I just go gaga over the credits. But my God, what opening credits. It starts off with a black and white studio logo and military stock footage. So you, like, people come into the movies for the first time, just think, oh, this is just going to be like a movie. And then when it talks about now, the war of the worlds, and then bam! Color credits, military font, flashing lights, sinister as fuck music. This is how you open a movie and let them know you are going to get your fucking socks knocked off.
Oh my God. Can you imagine going to a movie in 1953? You've never seen anything in color before.
Maybe Robin Hood with Errol Flynn, but...
Maybe. I always thought that Robin Hood was colorized. I thought it was originally black and white. I could be wrong. But you imagine, if not the first one, like, it's very rare. But not only was it color, but just, like, such rich color. That would have made people shit their pants if they were used to only seeing, like, movies and TV in black and white at the time.
Oh, no. And, even movies like Scaramouche and Robin Hood, or Wizard of Oz, they're pretty, they're quaint, they're soft, they're gentle. This movie slaps you across the face with color, just, like, enough to give you an epileptic seizure, as well as music that just lets you know, like, shit is going bad.
Yeah, we're not fucking around with this one, folks.
It is just a full-on sensual assault.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
Yeah.
It's how you start a fucking movie, man.
Yeah. And it carries through. Like, one of the good things I've got on my list for something I absolutely loved about this is just the movie. Everything looks so fantastic. It is so rich. The production value, obviously, was high. A lot of the special effects were groundbreaking, stuff that was never done before. And just is so pleasing to look at. It is just so lush. It is, the colors are so deep, so beautiful. And from the first time I saw this movie years ago, the first time I saw this was probably when I was a teenager, because I actually borrowed the movie from the town library. It's like, yeah, didn't you know that? Like, back when people used to actually still go to a library, you could just go, like, check out movies for free as well, and not just books.
Man, I was such a chump going to the video store.
Yeah, really. I mean, not that they didn't have exactly, like, the new releases or anything, but, like, really old stuff like this. And what was really cool was that I didn't get to do this. I checked out the VHS tape, of course. But they also had film reels there as well. If anybody had an old school projector, you could check out the film reel of this.
Shit.
And next time I'm home, I'm in my hometown, I want to go to the library just to see if they still have the film reel of this movie. Because I will find a projector somewhere if they still have this.
Okay, now what is your first good? Your opening salvo.
Okay, other
or
than...
salivation.
So we talked about the visual, so yeah, you start off with the visual, so check that off. I got to talk about the acting. The acting in this was top-notch. Very well done, not just from the main cast, but like the supporting cast were pretty good. And considering this is, 1950s sci-fi, how many other instances of 1950s sci-fi can you think where, like, the acting was good?
Yeah, that is just... You see a lot of things and you're just like, wow, these actors are just as good as the kids in this movie.
Exactly.
And what made this movie great? No kids.
Like, one of the things I liked about The Thing from Another World, one of the highlights on my good list when we covered that one, was the acting was really good. And I mean, for the time, especially for a sci-fi movie, that was pretty much unheard of, because usually, like, the acting and effects are pretty cheesy when it came to early sci-fi.
Yeah, because you don't have... Actors have to relate to their characters, so when you throw in something that's like a virgin field, such as science fiction, aside from books, which, you know, you don't have much representation in that, so what do these actors have to fall back on to evoke this thing that they know fuck all about?
Exactly.
So to bypass that and get these people to just nail this, it's like you'd think that these kids grew up listening to radio plays and stuff, or that they put on little sci-fi things themselves. Like, they actually seem to know what the fuck they're doing and what they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Like these, like I said, A Thing from Another World, I love that for the acting. The acting was well done. The dialogue was well done. And this one was pretty much on par. Like, it was, everybody did a great job, I thought. And was really, like, because, like, that's one of the things, I mean, I love old cheesy movies, old horror movies, old sci-fi. But, I mean, you never get points for the acting. I mean, it's always pretty cheesy. And sometimes that's part of the charm. Like, you know, it's like you can kind of enjoy it because, like, the acting is not so great. But no, this was top notch. Everybody did a fantastic job. The cast was really well. They had a really well rounded cast, so good for them. Like, that was very enjoyable. All right, so continue to gushing, Mike. What else you got?
The pacing. 20 minutes in, and the Martians have already fired their amazing beam twice. 10 minutes after that, shit has hit the fan with a full-on ass-kicking of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it just picks up from there.
Yeah, well, the movie is fast-paced because, I mean, it's not a long movie. It's 85 minutes. Like, I always say that for any horror sci-fi movie, 90 minutes is a sweet spot. If you go a little bit over, that's fine. If you go a little bit under, that's fine. But, coming in 85 minutes, like... Yeah, like, they get through a big story in a short amount of time. And so pace, yeah, like, it's paced great. There is no boring spots in this movie. When nothing's actually happening, like any action scenes, it's very tense. Like, you're just waiting for stuff to happen. And you know it's just about to happen. Shit's about to go down. So, yeah, it's, you nailed it with that one. The pacing is great.
Well, just as a testament, they had a square dancing scene that wasn't boring.
That's true, yeah. And that's not a statement I thought I'd ever agree with, but... Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay, so what about you?
I didn't... At first, I didn't think, because, like, I read the book a long time. Like, I saw this as a teenager for the first time, but years before I saw the movie, I read the book. And I was a little ticked off that they changed the setting. I still hold true that, like, I would love to see a version of this that actually takes place in Victorian-era England. I think that would be great, but that is coming. Apparently, we're getting a Netflix show pretty soon that's based on that, so I guess I'll get my wish. But considering the change in setting, I think it actually worked really well. I read this, and now this, you know, is not an original thought. Like, I read this, but I just agreeing with it. That it also reflected, you know, we were in the America was in the Cold War era at the time when this came out. And I think it had, like, a lot of connections with that. Like, this was a fear, like, you know, of a hostile invasion by a superior military force. That was, a real fear of Americans at the time. So there was definitely some connection there. It just worked. Like, it was... visually pleasing. I don't think at the time, I think now you can make it work if you made this movie and you set it in Victorian era England. I think you can make it work. At the time, if they did it that way, you wouldn't have gotten the visual effects extravaganza that we saw in this movie, because, you know, they could have did the Martians the same way, but the military might of, like, the military forces we saw wouldn't have had the same impact. You know, figuratively and literally. So, I kind of, for this movie, I think it worked well that they went with, you know, modern times, that, well, 1950s, I should say. All right, and what else you got?
It was refreshing to see the American military getting their ass kicked. Because usually, like, so many American movies riding high off that World War II thing, oh, yeah, like, when we get that stick-to-itiveness and elbow grease, America can do anything. So it was just refreshing to see America be like, okay, let's throw the atomic bomb at it. Oh, fuck a duck. Okay, well, it's not going well.
Yeah.
This, so much of what populates my list is, I had to break it down into subgoods. And one of them is just, like, great little moments. So I'll just, like, rather than hog everything for about a good 10 minutes, I'll just, like, break down, like, a collection of little moments. And then, like, that'll be, like, a good one, and you can take something else.
Sure.
And, like, you can add to this as well. Like, we'll just get on, like, great little moments that fit in this. Like, the opening narration describing intelligences far greater than our own, unsympathetic to us. And then they... like, this is a 50s movie, so again, they didn't have satellite imagery. So they start showing, like, artist rendition of the different planets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how all of them were uninhabitable to the Martians. And they miss Venus, but I won't hold it against them. But just seeing, like, the way that they were showing, like, the surface of Jupiter before, I guess, they realized it was full of, like, it was just gas. But still, like, the fact that they talked about, like, the atmosphere. So they did have some idea, considering, again, they didn't have satellites at this time. So how they gathered this knowledge, I'd like to know. Besides, like, simply just looking at it with a telescope and going, yep, that looks,
yep, big. That's Uranus.
Heavy. And then there's just, like, cute little moments. Like, when the forest rangers see the meteor crash, and one guy decides to call it in, and the other guy he's playing cards with takes a peek at the cards.
Yeah.
That was just really cute and funny. And then another one is the meet cute between Clayton and Sylvia, where she doesn't recognize him from the cover of Time because of Superman syndrome, i.e. he has glasses on, so there's no way that you could.
Yeah.
And then when the alien does fire the beam from that, for lack of a better term, the Cobra periscope, it generates an electromagnetic pulse, like an atomic blast.
Yes, that was a great addition to add, like it making it, like knocking out all the electronics using an electromagnetic pulse. I fucking love that. Because, I mean, that's one of the things that you talked about in the radio play was, you know, taking out, basically just like rendering the technology useless, because it was going after power plants, knocking out power plants, any transmission lines, things like that. And they did it this way by just saying, like, hey, electromagnetic pulse, all our technology is now garbage. So I fucking love that. I made that note as well. That was great.
Yeah, so I've got like other subcategories, but I'll let you chime in for now. What is another great thing?
Now, this is mine personally, and this is gonna make me sound so evil, but it was one particular scene that I fucking loved. I had to make a note of it, and that is when Sylvia's uncle, the priest, decides to go and walk up to the Martians, and I'm not gonna be hurt because God's gonna protect me. And he's like, you know, he's doing the, not the Lord's Prayer, but whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, the Shepherd's Prayer. I walk through the valley of the
shadow
of the dead.
Yeah, the Shepherd's Prayer. And he's like, you know, the Lord's going to protect me, blah, blah, blah. I walk to the aliens, and then he gets his fucking ass vaporized. It's like the Martian was in his machine, and just like, they got religious people here too? Zap.
Oh, fuck, not a Jehovah's Witness. Vaporize him. Come on. Turn on the damn beam. I'm trying. It's charging up. I can't make it fire any faster. He's talking. He's trying to convert us.
I just love that, man. That scene tickled me from the very first time I saw it.
You took one of my goods. I knew we'd overlap eventually.
Yeah, I had to mention that. I just love that scene. I watched that scene like over and over again. So, all right, what else you got for the good?
Suspenseful moments. Like, when the Cobra neck reveals itself from the crater, just that sound effect, like, while it's scanning, and then, like, that whatever they did to show that this thing is charging up, and then that amazing pew, 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 as it, like, bombards them with particles of light. Mm-hmm. In a heat ray, just vaporizing the three ambassadors to Earth, who decide, hey, let's walk towards it screaming and waving a flag. That can't be seen as aggressive by any culture.
Yeah, really. That was a great scene, too. That first kill scene, like, holy shit.
Just, like, everything about it, even like, during the nice tense moments when you see smoke coming off the crater, and then part of it starts to unscrew, which, you know, the less you think about it, the better, because then you'd start to wonder, like, why does a rock have threads?
Yeah.
Like, how much of this, like, was a it's not like they got covered in earth when they hit the dirt, because otherwise parts of it would be exposed. So you'd think that they were launched as pucks or rocks. So why would I have to unscrew and throw a thing out to, you know, the less you think about it, the better. Because yeah, just enjoy it for what it is. Yeah. When that head comes out, it looks like a snake, it sounds like a snake, and it's just looking around, and then when it sees the two guys, and you hear, and the music, bum, 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 and the music's like, and everything about that scene is amazing, suspenseful. Like, you can just tell these guys are fucked from the get-go.
Yeah.
But it's still a surprise when it finally unleashes this devastation on them.
Mm-hmm. Because I got that on my list, too. There's another particular scene. It's when the two police officers and the main character show back up in this when they discover that the three guys they left behind are dead. And not just dead, which was like a great fucking scene, because when they... Where are the three men they left behind? And they walk up close and they see like the three piles of ashes actually in the shape of people.
They look like Kevin Hart logos. They look like Keith Haring logos.
Yeah. And that looked so amazing. Like, and that was just fucking iconic. Like, just the three piles of ashes, like person-shaped ashes laying on the ground. And then
that would have been great on its own. And then
Deputy Dewey decides to fucking, like, sees it and jumps back in the car and tries to, and takes off.
He abandons our heroes.
And, like, the first time I saw this, I was like, I remember thinking, you piece of shit, I hope you die. And literally I had the words out of my mouth. And he gets zapped.
Yes. Just when you think, oh man, like we want to see something awesome like that again right away. No, we're going to see it again. And boy,
see a full fucking cop car get vaporized this time.
Yeah, it drives off. You just see a thing like turn red as it gets shot, and you're like, oh, that guy dead. Even if the car somehow avoided exploding, like, cause you don't see the car itself explode. You just see the car drive out of frame, glowing red, and then fire coming from the bush.
Either that or he, you know, he hit 90 miles an hour and engaged a flux capacitor and went back in time.
Unfortunately, it's only 10 seconds back, so he still gets vaporized.
He reappears right in front of the beam. Fuck.
Wait, didn't you get killed? What do you mean I got killed? I'm right here. And there's so many other moments. Like, you just think, this one ship is taking out everything that's thrown at it. This thing is going to take, like, half the eastern seaboard to contain this thing. And then you see a second comet in the sky. This is not isolated, and this thing that has been invincible thus far is now getting backup.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, just more suspense. Like, this is not just an attack. This is a full-on invasion force. And I forget exactly when this takes place, but Clayton and Sylvia take off in a plane, and you get to see from the plane's point of view as it's, like, going over the sky, ducking, like, trying to dodge some smoke. And then, as it goes over a mountain, what's right behind the mountain under it but an emerging Martian?
Yeah.
And you just see that thing, and you're like, oh, fuck! Like, this could have been a ride at Universal Studios.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I like that you actually get to see the scope of the invasion. So it's not just like, oh, here's an alien, and we'll talk about, like, more showing up later. It's just like you actually get to see, like, the comets coming down, excuse me, and the Martians, like, emerging. So, yeah. Very good.
And I got my own note about the priest. The priest thinks because they're so scientifically advanced, that means that they must be closer to God. Despite the fact that at this point we know it's killed four people at least. Yeah. And it has shot at planes and anything that approaches it. And he gets vaporized like he should.
Mm-hmm.
I have to wonder if the aliens thought that he was casting a spell on them.
If the aliens are really superstitious, they're like, fuck, it's a witch! shoot it.
And to continue with the suspense is the Martian when they take refuge in the house, and the Martians start probing the house just out of curiosity. You see this terrifying, simple, kind of cute, but also menacing because you know what it's connected to. The probe as it's scouting through the house. And then when the Martian shows up, you get to see it up close. And it looks like a testicle with a face.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that.
And like, just so much is suspenseful. Like, you don't know, like these things have amazing technology, but what about the creatures themselves? Do they have, like personal weapons on them? But, yeah. So I've got, like, one more category. But this is, yeah, I'm going to let you have another good. Let you have another crack at the praise.
Well, I like that, they actually consider this is 1953. One of the lead scientists that were working on the Martian problem was a woman. How often did you see that in any type of 1950s science fiction?
Yeah, that was, like, the fact that when she showed up, none of them ever said the men are talking.
Yeah, exactly. So, that was a step forward. Now I'll have something later on that makes it take a big step backwards, but... But I thought that was pretty cool, like, that they did that. You know, that was, it was good to see that, that it wasn't just, like, you know, they didn't have just some helpless female. This was somebody that was working, like, to try to see if they could find some kind of defense against the Martians. So, definitely had to put that on the list. All right, and what else you got?
My last sub-good category is the UFO. Because there's so much to talk about, at one point, one and cover it. Like, when the UFO, some, again, don't think about it, somehow it sheds the crater, and you see it rise in its full silver, red, and green glory. It looks like a fucking aggressive Christmas ornament.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just that pulsing, but then you get to see the green beams on the side, and you're like, oh, what the fuck do they do? And then you find out what they do.
Yeah.
But, you see, at that point, you can see strings pulling this thing up, but that's okay.
Yeah, you can, actually.
Because somehow they animated three light beams just to give an homage to the tripod design from the book.
Yeah, they did, but I want to talk about that a little bit as well.
Like, the way they described it is like anti-gravity beams for balance. And the professor even calls it out and mentions it. So, you know, for a sci-fi movie, one of the biggest problems in sci-fi movies is that they try to come up with something like fantastical and because space, but they don't really think too much about the science. They try to focus on the fiction and just throw science in to, you know, try to impress people or, you know, as the cheapest vehicle for the message they're trying to get across. But right. These people, they thought out their lore, like the way that the beams function, what they take apart, even like the force fields, or as he calls it, an electromagnetic covering or a protective blister.
Protective blister, that's got to be the first time I've heard that in sci-fi.
And the heat beams burn everything, but instead of seeing like more of the same, they decide, oh, no, we can give you another amazing, devastating effect from this thing. We got the green beams on the side, which the professor tells you they neutralize mesons, which are the glue that hold matter together. This is a 50s movie.
Yeah.
So basically, and he's telling you about fucking mesons.
So basically just makes whatever it hits, like it falls apart at the atomic level. It just comes apart.
And that is amazing. Instead of just saying, oh, they have energy beams, like they could have phoned it in with the cheapest fucking dialogue possible, but these guys got into theoretical physics when they wrote the script. This was written by actual nerds, people that wanted to learn the right thing that aliens would do. Like, some of it is speculation because it's all they could do, but they did know some things and they applied it.
Mm-hmm.
And even to talk about the UFO again, the atomic bomb scene. Just when you think, oh, like, one thing they couldn't do in the Victorian version, like, if they had an atom bomb, that would have tipped the scales. Nope. We show it, and that electromagnetic blister, fuck, it does its job.
Yeah.
And even at the end of the movie, when one of the ships crashes and it opens up, you get to see like a nice, good close-up on the arm to talk about like the Martians overall. Like, you get to see this arm pulsating and throbbing. And then, but also so that you don't start, so that they don't, that they didn't have to waste time designing an interior, they show that the door is jammed by rocks, so no one could get in. So you can't even ask the obvious question. If the door's open, why don't they go inside and, you know, why can't we see what's going on? Oh, the door's jammed by rocks. Like, these people thought out just about everything. Like, it wasn't just that it looked great, it was thought out great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all my goods.
That's all your goods? Yeah, that pretty much wraps up mine as well. Like, I think you hit the ones that I mentioned myself, I think you hit them pretty much, so... Yeah, the list is much longer than my bad list, but I do have a few things to talk about. So, since you started with the good, I'll start with the bad. And since you brought this up, the design of the ships. Now, I'm not going to say that the look of the Martian ships were bad as such. I'm not going to say that. Like, I think they did a great job with the look. I'm just saying that I like the way they were described in the book better. It's simply because, you know, reading the book and reading about these things, these huge war machines walking on these tripod tentacle-like legs, metallic tentacle legs, I think that was pretty fucking cool. And they pretty much nailed the look. While I don't, I fucking hated the 2005 Tom Cruise War of the Worlds movie, the look of the actual Martian machines was fucking fantastic. I'll give credit where it's due. They fucking nailed the look of the machines. And I thought that was so much scarier, so much cooler to have them walking around on tripod legs and just floating in midair. because it just looked like a spaceship, right? Like, essentially, it was just like a spaceship floating around, zapping the shit out of everything. But to have this thing, like, to make it look very alien-like, very, like, almost animalistic, walking around on metal tripod legs and just, like, not only... shooting the shit out of everything, but, like, stomping on everything.
Yeah, skewering them with their spindly legs.
Yeah, that was so much cooler. And it's not that they couldn't do it. I mean, this was 1953. There was decades of movies before this, like sci-fi and horror movies, that did great, great jobs with stop-motion animation. There was no reason why they couldn't have done the same with this.
I think they probably tried to do that, but it probably would have inflated the budget on top of everything else they're doing.
I'm positive it was a cop-out. Like, it was like a cost-saving measure.
And again, being like all those stop-motion movies that we saw at the time were in black and white. When you try to mix it with color as well,
yeah, it could be. I just would have rather have seen it like with the tripod legs. That's just my own choice. I think it would have looked cooler. Yeah. But whatever.
I think they probably tried when they were making the movie, and it just didn't come out good. So just to streamline the process and get the show on the road, they're just like, let's just dangle it from a string. We'll draw some legs in, because I imagine trying to get these things to move around during a city, it would just be so long to film a scene with these things moving around. Whereas if they're just on a string and they're shooting shit happens, it gets done, they can just continue shooting the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to draw effects coming from the ship than to take pictures of something and barely moving across
and then
a
not just
set.
Legs having moving, but like having like the actual ship part, like, you know, the way that it's done right
adjust.
Now, they're just floating, they can move in a straight line. Yeah, like they would have to adjust with the movements of the legs. So maybe it was, like you said, cost-saving, time-saving measure. I just think it'd be a cooler design, that's all.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they tried and it just became such a massive obstacle. They're just like, look, we got a $2 million budget. You want this thing done within 5 years, you're going to have a $5 million budget. So I think that it only could look good now because of CGI.
Yeah, maybe.
To streamline the process and that you could have it interact with people and not look fake.
That could be it. But that's just a personal choice on my behalf. Yeah. But okay, what do you have for the bad?
After vaporizing three folks and a cop, the UFO just chills, waiting to be surrounded by the military. Like, why not fly and char the town? It's like, nah, dog, let's just maintain and see how humans flex nuts.
Yeah, we'll see what they got.
Yeah, like, let's just wait and see what they throw at us.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed a little... You know, you can fly at any time.
Because I'm assuming at this point, they really didn't know, like, what kind of... Maybe, well, it did say, the narrator did say at the beginning that they've been studying Earth. But
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty, you're right, it was a pretty ballsy move to just assume that Earth didn't have any defense against them, you know?
Maybe they were probing it, and then they could just tell everybody, like, if for some reason they lose communication with the first saucer, those things are already en route.
Yeah.
But I'm just imagining they'll just be like, okay, just fuck Earth, head to Venus.
Or maybe the guys in the first, the Martians in that first probe were just like cannon fodder. They're just like, oh, they'll be the test to see like how Earth's defenses hold up. These were a bunch of guys he sent that nobody liked.
Yeah, they were like, they were just like the Barney Fife of the alien invasion force. They're just like, hey, how about you go there and just like test them?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Long live Mars! Yeah, long live Mars.
So, one of the things I had to put on my list was, you know, I gave them props for, like, being a little more advanced because they, being a little more forward because they actually made a woman one of the main scientists working on a defense to the Martian. But fuck, did it take a quick turn down misogyny road. After the two main characters, they're escaping the plane. And they're holed up in, like, an old house. And this is after her uncle just got vaporized. Like, I mean, the military just got decimated. This fucking asshole, he's sitting there at the table doing nothing except, like, you know, flapping his gums while she's in the kitchen making breakfast.
Well, to be honest, he did, I guess, like, carry her or fly the plane. So,
yes, but
I guess he did his part.
Like, and there was nothing advanced about, like, you know, about this character. She was the typical, like, you know, product of his time, hysterical woman, you know?
Yeah. Like, you talk about how good it was to see a female scientist. It would have been better if she was the female scientist.
Yeah, made her, like, that would have been such more of an, instead of having both these characters, yes, one female lead, and she could have been the scientist.
Like, to have them both talking about, like, electromagnetic disturbances, ways to penetrate the shield, her coming up with some ideas, maybe something that works.
Yeah, like, her dialogue was basically boiled down to either hysterically screaming or, don't ask me, I'm just a girl. So, yeah, that was pretty cringy. And I know it's a product of its time, but still, like, I've given up letting that be an excuse. For poor female characters. And unfortunately, man, it's something that carried on for a long time. I guess we didn't really see a strong female character in sci-fi until probably when the first Alien movie came out.
Yeah, if you know a better one, please hit us up in the comments.
Like, I mean, that's
we want to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
We want to hear some amazing 60s and 70s sci-fi heroines.
Yeah, like, I'm just going, that's just off the top of my head, that's all I can think about, but if I'm wrong, like, let me know, for sure. And, do you have anything else for the bad? I've got one more thing, but if you have something, go ahead.
I've got, like, some, basic points, like, the Martians, they attack everything they see in the house, but then when one of them decides to scout the house, that's when they decide to get all touchy and friendly. Instead of scouring this house with, like, hand blasters and body armor. Like, they've shown that they don't want to associate with humans. So this whole E.T.-like moment when an alien sneaks up on her and, like, he doesn't, like, attack her. He touches her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what message are you trying to send with these things? Are they curious or are they here to kill us? Because you got to have a consistent tone with these things.
Yeah, maybe.
And if they're and if they're different, like if there are some aliens that are friendly, then you know you could have made that a plot point. Like some of them are just like, look, we came with the invasion force, but we're not a big part of it, and you know we like your planet, and here's how you can defeat some of these ships.
Yeah,
either have no friendly aliens and they're all unified on the mission, or if some of them are like actually friendly, go with it.
True enough. Yeah, and the only thing else I had on my bad list was in regards to that same scene, actually, but a different point. Well, overall, I kind of like the look of the alien, like the hands, the body shape, that like almost T-shaped body type of the aliens was pretty cool. What I didn't like was that fucking green, blue, and red eye they had.
Was that an eye for their entire face?
Well, yeah, so I guess their whole face was an eye, but also it matched perfectly with the freaking probe that they sent into the house before the alien actually went there.
Yeah, that's one of the things I sent you. Wait a second, their cameras are just designed completely after their faces?
Can you imagine, like, you know, your camera on your phone was just basically look like a human eyeball? Like, I just thought that was really bad. Like, the probe itself, I thought that looked cool, you know, had the multicolored lens and stuff like that. But then when you see the alien, it's got, like, basically it looks like it's got a probe for a face.
Yeah, it's a cyclops. I originally thought that was its face. Like, it's the red light. I was like, is that red light its mouth?
Yeah, I don't know.
And the green and blue are, like, different colored eyes. And then when Clayton hits it with an axe, it runs away screaming, and I'm like, its mouth was a solid light.
Yeah.
What is it screaming with?
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I mean, overall, I guess I'd like to look at the alien just except for that fucking giant, was it that game that used to light up? It was like the Simon Says game? That's what it looked like. It looked like if you got, like, the dollar, like, the knockoff version or something from, like, the bargain shop or something.
The dollar store Simon Says.
Exactly. But, yeah, so that, I think that was a weird choice to go with. Especially since the rest of the alien, like, looked pretty cool. But, yeah, that wasn't good.
It would have been good if that thing had, to see if they had, like, a hand version of those blasters.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. Like, to see some...
Again, body armor. If it's got a magnetic shell for its thing, how awesome would it be if he tried to hit it with an axe and it bounces off that same blister because he's got, like, a belt that emits a force field.
And you got, like, little hand vaporizers.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And the only other thing, this was a minor nitpicky thing, just that there was no reference to the aliens actually capturing humans in this one. It was like complete annihilation.
Yeah, no red vines, no black smoke, yeah. no terraforming the planet.
Yeah, no draining the blood and using it as fertilizer. Which was a big part of the book, right? Like, that was the original story, like capturing humans, carrying around in cages, and yeah, like there was, well, again, 85 minute runtime, of course, is going to be condensed a bit. There's some parts going to be cut down, but I just, like, a quick mention of that, like, all they had to do was that, like, you know, the people that weren't being killed were being captured and bled out.
Yeah, you could just show, like, a light beam comes from the ship, like from the undercarriage, and it just puts, you could just draw, like, a little animated net on them, and then pulls them off camera. And you're just like, oh, they're kidnapping some of us. Boom.
Yep, that's all it took. But that's nitpicking. That was just, I like that from the book. And so, yeah, but man, all overall, like, solid fucking sci-fi horror movie. I watched this, like, all day. This is fucking great. One of my favorite sci-fis of all time, for sure.
Yeah, I did have three little mini qualms with it. At one point, Clayton says, like, we need to analyze this blood sample. And this fucking idiot says, if you want Martian blood, you can get all you want after the plane drops the bomb. Mm. Yeah, because all that fire and debris and, fucking radiation isn't going to alter the samples at all.
Nope.
That's fine, yeah. I'll just go take this dusty, filthy, glowy debris, and I'm pretty sure I'll get some accurate information off of it.
Exactly.
And we see the bubble dome protecting them, and I thought this was great, but there was a missed opportunity I wanted to see. I would love to see somebody, like, hidden in a trench with a rocket launcher, and then when this Martian thing passes over him, then he blasts its belly, since he's now within the dome.
Kind of like, I'm totally going to nerd out here, but Empire Strikes Back, Luke Skywalker taking down one of the big walkers. Gets it from underneath and, like, cuts a hole in it and blows it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been, like, cool.
It would have been good to see a soldier blasted in the belly, or at least, like, one of the energy leg emitters, so that this thing, like, starts to spin out, crash into another saucer. Or, you know, like, have some humans nail down a few of these things from snake attacks. Like, obviously, it wouldn't it wouldn't really change the overall picture, but because the aliens still have overwhelming numbers. But the fact that they would have to, you know, change their tactics, or that humans are having some victory, I would have liked to have seen that. And then the way the movie ends with God, that's fine. You can kill thousands of my children, but if you burn that one church, then it's time for me to activate the bacteria that I put in the atmosphere for this very occurrence. And it ends with hymns. An entire movie that had nothing to do with God ends with, like, basically the whole world singing, like, Amen.
Yeah, God always gets all the credit. It's like, yeah, okay, God, if you're that powerful and omnipotent, could you maybe have done something before the Martians killed millions of people and...
like, save their planet so that they don't have to invade
us? And if you're the creator of the entire universe, that means he created the Martians as well. So the Martians are like, what the fuck, man? You killed all our guys?
Oh, God. You gave us these brains. I thought you had our back.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's God picking favorites with his kids.
There you go. Okay, well, yes, absolutely. Solid sci-fi. One of the... there's a reason why this is referred to as one of the best sci-fi ever. So many movies have imitated, and I don't mean just like, you know, War of the Worlds remakes or the TV show or anything like that. I mean, movies that were supposed to be their own thing, but like were obviously just a new skin on an old movie. Independence Day. And I'm going to say Mars Attacks, but of course Mars Attacks was more of a parody than a remake. But yeah, it's basically the template for every alien invader movie.
Pretty sure that E.T. was modeled off of these things.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That, like, T-shaped alien body? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, with basically a scrotum with a face.
Exactly. So, yeah, so this was interesting, especially after doing the War of the Worlds radio play last week. It was nice to see, like, a comparison of the two, just to see what... you know, we went from novel to radio play, from radio play to movie. So it was good to see the evolution of the story. You know, Mike, after watching this movie, I couldn't help but wonder how differently things would have played out if the radio play that, you know, that this was based on, if it happened today instead of in the 1930s.
Yeah. I wonder what that would be like. Fellas, you gotta run. I just heard on the radio we're all in danger.
Whoa, relax, man. What kind of danger?
Martians! They're invading! They're killing everyone! Martians? Sheldon, this guy's a crackhead or something. He sounds nuts. No! I just heard it on the radio! The news was coming live! Martians landed and they're attacking!
Huh. Okay, hold on. Let me check this on my phone. No, nothing in my news feed. Nothing on Twitter.
Yeah, and I just Googled it. It's not a real news report. It's a radio play, though. Oh, you must have started listening partway through. Radio play? Yeah, some guy named Orson Welles. Never heard of the guy, though. He wrote this play about Martian invaders, based it off of an old novel. Honestly, sounds like it would be better as a movie.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Who listens to the radio anymore?
What's a radio?
Did that kid just ask what's a radio?
Kids are so dumb. Yeah, the radio play certainly would have had the same effect today.
Yeah, like, radio doesn't have the same effect today.
No, without a doubt. Okay, guys, well, that is our coverage of 1953's War of the Worlds. What do you think about it? Have you seen it? If you haven't, do. It's worthwhile. If you have seen it, what are your thoughts? Did you like it, dislike it? Do you agree with what we had to say? Disagree? Did we miss certain points that you think we should have talked about? We want to hear from you. And of course, we want to hear from you for other things other than just movie. Like, for instance, if you have a movie you want us to cover on the show, you've got a few options to get a hold of us. You can email us at graveyardshiftpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @GYS_horrorpod. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/thegraveyardshiftpod. And, of course, on Instagram at instagram.com/thegraveyardshiftpod. If you're feeling particularly generous and you want to keep these episodes coming, you can be a sponsor of the show by going over to patreon.com/graveyard. There, for as little as $1 a month, you not only help us out with the production costs of the show, but you also get access to some pretty cool Patreon-exclusive bonus episodes. At least once a month, we throw up a new Patreon-exclusive episode that only our Patreon members can get. We do it a little differently most of the time than we do with the show. If we do a movie, we usually do a full synopsis of it, start to finish. Sometimes we do other things like TV shows and video games even. Top 10 lists, all yep. That kind of stuff.
And this month, we've got quite another deviation from the usual for the November Patreon.
We do. So that'll be something coming to you Patreon members soon. You know who you are, and we love you guys. But of course, we understand not everybody has the money to give us money. But you can still help us out a ton by going on to iTunes or Stitcher or however you get your podcasts, however you listen to us. Whichever way you do, there is definitely some way to rate and review and possibly subscribe. I put way too many syllables in possibly just now. There is certainly a way to subscribe or rate and review. If you could do that, we would certainly appreciate it in the long run. Actually, that's what helps us out the most. And if that's not possible, then just share us using your social media or by word of mouth. If you know anybody that you think would like to listen to us to talk about horror or horror-related movies, let them know about us. Mike, other than the graveyard shift, I'm sure you've got lots of other stuff going on. So what else do you want to plug?
Well, so far I've only got 3 concurrent podcasts.
That's all? Jeez, that's half of what you used to do.
Yes, I've got Technobabble, which is the tech discussion podcast with me and Rich Reeder. We talk about technology, developments, a little bit of science, just amazing new things that smart people are doing to change the world with devices, or amazing good news developments, applications like people trying to create little watches that can shake people out of PTSD nightmares. And night terrors, so they can get like a solid night's sleep.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we like to spread a little positivity and awareness with that show. And on a completely less contributing note, we have the Playing with Power podcast, where me and my friend Ben, for the moment, only for the show, like we're still going to be friends. He's just not going to be hosting the show. And we talk about Nintendo Power Magazine. We're currently discussing the 1996 year of Nintendo Power, where the Super Nintendo is on the way out. Sadly, the end of a golden era. And the N64 is in with its Dorito graphics. And then there's also the Taste Test, which you were recently on for the Halloween grab bag.
I was.
And that is the Taste Test Retro Gaming with Flavor. That's where you can find it on several podcasting platforms. And we're also going to be reviewing Balloon Fight this November. So check out our little discussion on that.
Oh, cool.
And that's all we got going for now. But if you have an idea for a podcast, I clearly have enough time. And so hit me up.
Yeah, Roger Corman needs his ideas. So guys, thank you so much for joining us. Just want to say, I know sometimes our release schedule over the past month or so has been a little flaky because there's so much fucking shit going on. Holy shit, it's unbelievable how much stuff can be going on in your life that takes up a lot of your time. And we do appreciate all of you sticking with us, but I think we've got things under control now. We should be back to a regular Monday schedule. So, but if anything deviates, of course, we will let you know. But we're going to be back next week with a brand new episode, and I'm sure you're going to like it. I actually can't wait to talk about next week's movie, man. We watched this one quite a while ago, and it's been sitting in my brain for a while. So, I got a lot of stuff to say.
Yeah, we happened to watch it just before October came around. So we're just like, okay, well, I guess we're just going to have to wait a month to talk about it. And then War of the Worlds came along, and I'm just like, well, there's no way we're going to let the sizzle die on this steak. We got to keep cooking. So then this show came along. So we're eventually going to get to next week's episode.
Well, that's right. But that is all for next week. Until then, I'm Sheldon.
And I'm Mike.
And thank you again for joining us on the Graveyard Shift. Ha 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 ha